Session number 9407, Richard White, part 4.
I dropped down behind a tree with my head up to the trunk, with a rifle in front, in a prone position, and just as I was getting into the prone position, as I had dropped down, I felt a locomotive had run over me. I got a bullet through both legs.
Could you feel the pain immediately?
Well, it was so shocked. It was such a shock. And then a numbness set in. But while I was trying to think at all, break out of this shock, a few seconds, another one hit me in the shoulder, right through this left shoulder. I had the hand forward with the rifle, you see, at the side of a tree, just behind the tree. Another one through this shoulder, smashed that. And I lay and I thought, well, I just lay. And then one of my compatriots behind another tree on my right and somewhat to the rear knew I was hit. He made a run over to join me to see what he could do and lay down beside me on my right side, and I almost immediately then got another bullet through the hip, into the hip. It didn't go right through it.
Through your left hip?
Yes, it exploded on a metal case I had in my pocket, overcoat pocket, and it hit that. And exploded fragments, tore a lump of flesh out of the hip and injected these fragments throughout the hip. So I said to him, as far as I was able to speak, to get the hell out, go back, get away, which he did. And he got back. And I just had to stick it out then. There was nothing anyone could do. I was obviously under observation. I was being sniped. And I just stayed there, just stayed still, and waited for dusk. And at dusk, everything shut down, firing ceased. And the lads came over and picked me up and took me back on a stretcher.
How long had you had to wait?
Oh, about 4 hours, 4.5 hours.
Were you in the sun?
No. Remember, it was winter, February. It wasn't very hot in the daytime, even in the sun. And in fact, it was cold in the evenings, and at night it was very cold.
Did you feel cold as you were
wet? I had
wet
an overcoat on. See, I went into action with an overcoat on.
Did you feel cold as you were waiting there?
I don't think so. Such a general feeling of numbness and nothingness. I must have passed out a number of times. Became sort of unconscious and then semi-conscious. But just waiting. Nothing else to do.
Were you in pain?
Yes, but it was so much pain, so many areas, which was all in with the shock. So there was a general feeling of, I couldn't feel the pain of the individual wounds at all, in that sense.
Did you think you'd had it?
I did. When I received that bullet in the hip, I thought it must have gone through my bowels and everything. And I thought that was it. But
were they firing at you all the time?
Oh, yes. Well, not at me, but there were bullets whizzing over all the time from our side in the early part of the period, and of course from the fascists were all the time firing.
What was passing through your mind?
Well, hoping that... The only thing was that I realised that I was observed because of the nature of those single wounds, the way they picked me off like that. And that it was somebody, a sniper, I suppose. Therefore, I was under observation. I thought, well, if I lay dumb, he will think that he's finished me off. And therefore, he won't bother wasting any more ammunition on me. So that's what I did. I stayed like that, stayed still, and stayed like that. And so he didn't fire at me again. The rest of it, I could hear the bullets from machine guns, not continually, but sporadically, going through the leaves and the trees.
Were you frightened?
Yes, I was frightened, of course, especially when we went into the attack. I mean, I don't think anyone can be not frightened, because it's the unknown. And it's the fear of being afraid and the fear of this and that that all gives you fear, but you have to overcome it. You have to select some fear, I suppose, to overcome the other fears.
How far do you think you ran before you were hit?
I suppose about 60, 80 yards.
Could you see the enemy?
No, I couldn't see a thing. That's why I'd kept running as far as I did, because I couldn't see any their emplacement or anything. I couldn't see any targets or anything, and therefore I didn't think that they were close enough to be able to snipe me as they did. And I was dodging, and I was just thinking, well, I'm dodging the general bullets that are flying through these trees. And I was lucky, until I laid down, then I was hit.
With what were you armed?
303 rifle.
A British rifle?
Yes, an old 303.
Oh, the Enfield?
The Enfield.
Mm. How old was it, do you know?
I couldn't say. I never had a chance to fire it.
Did it seem to be in good condition?
Yes, as good as it could be, as I could make it. I mean, it was cleaned. I cleaned it thoroughly, and it was in working order, good working order. But what it would have been like trying to fire a fixed target or what, I don't know.
You'd not practiced with it?
No, I hadn't had any firing practice.
Did you get any shots away as you went into action?
No, because you couldn't fire on the run. I mean, the main thing was to get as far forward as I could safely, to be able then to fire, to make the diversion, and our attacking would be attracting the attention of the fascists, and they would have to attempt to prevent a frontal attack. They may see us as a frontal attack. Whether it happened or not, we don't know.
Did you take any other arms with you, like grenades?
No.
So I interrupted you with you saying that you were rescued on a stretcher.
Yes, they came at dusk, picked me up as I lay, and just laid me down on the stretcher, face down, took me back to the trench. I was given a cigarette and a cup of tea, and I think I had an injection there, I don't know. Then I was loaded on to, carried back some distance to an ambulance, put on the ambulance, and taken to the field hospital, where they didn't attempt to to do anything about my right ankle. The bullet had gone right through the right ankle, shattered it. They never even took the boot off at the dressing station. They put my arm in a rough cradle, my left arm, gave me some injections, and then after I don't know how long, because one is only barely conscious of what's going on under those circumstances, I was loaded on to another ambulance, which took me to another hospital. Then I was put on a train. I stayed a night at that other hospital. I was put on a train in the morning and finished up in Murcia.
What happened there?
There I went into hospital and I was the only English one there, and all staff were either Spanish, French, or American. There was an American doctor and a couple of American nurses. And there they gave me a thorough examination. They finally took the boot off my foot, right foot, and they operated. I don't know. I believe they closed the fragment. They took out the loose fragments of bone, and they closed the jagged from the foot and the leg, closing it together like that, which shortened the leg by a couple of inches and locked. There was no ankle movement at all from then on. And then they redid this, reset this.
The shoulder.
The shoulder. Then from there, the thing they had to do was to try and heal the infection, osteomyelitis in the ankle, which was began weeping through the bullet hole. And I was not in a fit state to move around anywhere for some time. In all, I spent until September. That was from February till September before I was able to get on crutches and be able to make my way with assistance from the hospital to first to Albacete, where I had to go before a medical commission, which assessed me 90% disability. I don't know how they did that, they were walking on crutches. And there I had to make my way to Barcelona. I was in a hotel in Barcelona for nearly a week with an wounded American while we were trying to get passports, because I'd lost my British passport.
Who was the wounded American?
Herman. Name's gone, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
It's too long ago, you see, to remember all these details. Anyway, he'd been wounded through both hands. Couldn't use his hands very much. And I had to replace my lost passport with a temporary one from the British consul in Barcelona to get back to England. And he had to do the same for an American passport. And then finally we set off and I linked up. In Barcelona I was linked up with Jack Brent, who was an English, Canadian English, who had been wounded, I think, a little while after I was, on his way up to the line. At one point, we had to make a dash from one little hillock across an open space, a short open space, to the other one, which was seemingly under fire from the fascists, although we couldn't see them, but they were firing all the time. They had to wait the chance and then make a dash. And Jack dashed and shot in the spine in the process. So he went straight to hospital. He was paralyzed from the waist down. Well, he was in Murthy Hospital when I was there, but in another ward. So we just communicated via nurses where we could. But we were both released at the same time, and we made our way, Jack and I, to, by train, from Barcelona down to Port Bau. Then we went over to Perpignan again.
When would this have been?
This was in September.
September.
Yeah.
What do you think to the hospital treatment that you received?
In Spain?
Yes.
Well, I think it was marvellous under the circumstances, because the circumstances were dreadful. There was lack of medical supplies of all kinds. Therefore, there were high incidents of infections of one kind or another, because it was quite hot in Murcia, in that area. And they hadn't the facilities. They were overcrowded, and there was even the food question, you see. And we knew that a lot of Spaniards were having to go without necessary rations in order to that we should be fed and nursed. And, you know, it was, one felt that that we were a burden, although the Spanish people, of course, never gave any impression of that, that we were. I mean, they willingly gave everything they'd got that was necessary for the fighting for men, the international brigaders in the line, and those in hospital.
Did you get enough food in hospital?
Yes, we got enough. Oh yes, we got enough. Obviously, because... Unfortunately, there, being in an agricultural area where fruit was plentiful and eggs were in good supply, and of course, as throughout Spain, there was no limit to red wine, which the doctors advocated us drinking, because they said it was good for our blood and helped our healing, so we drank plenty of red wine.
Do you remember the names of any of the people who treated you?
Ruth Epstein was the American nurse. I don't remember the names of the Spanish nurses or the doctors. Only one doctor was Dakin. I think he was French, and he was the one that introduced a method for attempting to deal with infection. They called it the Dakin treatment. Don't know precisely what it was, but he used it on me, but it wasn't successful in getting rid of this infection in my foot. We had discussed, on my insistence at any rate, but we had discussed through the nurse that question, that that leg ought to come off. I felt it ought to come off. I couldn't see any point in retaining it, because I couldn't see that they were ever going to be able to get over this infection, and then what would I have? A useless foot anyway, in the long run. But they were loath to do that because of the lack of facilities. and therefore they advise that it would be better to hang on until I was well enough to be able to make my way back and to get back to England and have the amputation there if required. This is precisely what happened. I got back to England through Paris. I went straight into Balham Hospital and I was put under the observation of Dr. Gizane, Mr. Gizane, surgeon, who came and visited me in the ward, and he was an Australian, which I noted immediately. He spoke at the bed, so when he came to me, I, against all the rules and regulations of those days, patients didn't address doctors, only through matrons and so on. And I said to him straight away, "You're an Aussie, aren't you?" And he said, "Yes, how do you know?" I said, "Well, you can cut it with a knife. Your accent." He said, "Well, I thought I'd got rid of that." We were great pals from then on. He was a conservative, actually, but a real gentleman, in my sense of the word. We had some political discussions and differences, but we discussed my leg, and he agreed with me that it ought to come off. The chief physician of the hospital, Sinclair, I think his name was, he was against it. He advised going through, as he said, probably a year or 2 years hospitalization and treatment, and he would treat this infection and eventually he would get it healed up. And I said, "Well, what then? What am I going to have? What am I left with after that? At the best, a useless foot, 2 inches short, club foot. Is it going to bear my weight even, that ankle?" Well, of course, we can't guarantee anything, but after all, laddie, that is your own foot, and you ought to keep your own foot. Of course, I replied, "Sentiment doesn't come into this. I know it's my foot, but it's useless as it is, and you are not able to make it any better. So, obviously, the thing to do is to take it off and have an artificial leg, which will be far better than that ever would be." Dr. Gizane also advised the same. He said the same. Dr. Gizane then took me round, much against the, much to the displeasure of Sinclair and the matron and everybody else, took me in his car out of bed to, we went to Thomas's, Guy's,